If you didn't get any proper education, schooling and,
yeah,
and that,
yeah, yeah.
But you still got on.
Yeah. I don't know, like, it was the fact that we were working from such a young age. Mm-hmm. Like, we used to work, say, from 8 in the morning to 6 in the evening. I mean, the only thing we might eat was maybe a feed of black curtains or blackberries off the hedge or a turnip. You know, the turnip, not sweet. Mm-hmm. And get it on a gate where you just get it and chop it along and you peel the skin off it and eat it that way. Mm-hmm. We never had a regular meal for years.
Talk to me then about the mills. You were 21 or 22 when you got in.
It was 1960, so it was 21. That's 39. June 1960.
And at that stage, you had the experience of working
in the Irish Times.
In the Irish Times, yeah. So you were
I spent a bit of time in England. I was in the army in England for 3 years.
Tell me about your time when you joined the army. Where did you go?
When we left Dublin, we went to... My brother was already in Manchester. He wrote to us telling us that he had jobs and all lined up for myself and another chap called Jim Smith, who lived on St. Bridget's Lane in Clondalkin. And thinking that we had a job to go to, myself and Jim Smith, we boarded the cattle boat down the North Wall one evening, made our way to Manchester to find out that my brother had nothing. He lived in Rough. So we had no job. And it was either for me either go hungry. So I came across this lad, I can't think of his name, from Surbridge. And he said to me, if you don't want to go home, he says, the best way to get yourself out of the street is join the army. Which I did.
And were you running away from home at this time?
Oh, yeah. But I don't really want to publicise. I mean, I was no longer welcome, put it that way, yeah. But not longer welcome. I was sort of in the way because the house was getting overcrowded. So many, a two-bedroom house and all in one room. It was basically my own decision, you know what I mean? I wasn't forced.
So then, what did you do then in Manchester as soon as you...
As soon as I arrived, met with my brother. But he had already told us that the job's fixed up for us and all, so we'd be working on that Monday, but he nothing. We were living rough.
You decided to join the army then?
Yeah, after maybe a couple of months there. Like we were getting the assistance of the of the social welfare, but that only fed you maybe for one day, and then the rest of the time they were hungry. Really hungry now. I was a smoker at the time, picking butts off the street and smoking them. We used to go down to the Piccadilly there, in front of the bit of a part-time Piccadilly cinema, I think it was. And we used to watch the school kids come down to the schools and the colleges there, the prep schools, having their lunches. And when they dumped their lunch in the bin, he sat into the other lab, used to go over and take them out and eat them.
Imagine.
Yeah. People would believe that, but that's what I done. It was that badly off, yeah, and that hungry.
Who introduced you then to the Royal Ulster Fusiliers that were, no, the...
Rifles, yeah.
Introduced you to the army?
A guy from some Selbridge, at least I think he was from, he advised me to do that, if I didn't want to return home, to do that, get yourself off the street, and at least he said you'll have a bed to sleep and you'll have food.
And what did he suggest?
That I join. So when we were down to the recruitment office in Manchester, they said to me, being Irish, we'll send you over to Ballymena in Northern Ireland, to the Royal Ulster Rifles training area. And when they sure got there, 50% of the fellas were off in Dublin. So I wasn't on my own. And the rest were a mixture of Protestants and what have you. But we got on like a house of prayer. There was no aggravation, even though you understood that they really were all comrades, you know what I mean? So there was never any sectarian stuff at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when I got back, like, I started working in the mill, I was foolish enough to let it slip to somebody that where I'd been. And a couple of lads that were in there, well into their 60s, they would well remember the Easter Rising and the trouble that when they heard, they told me that, watch your back.
Did they really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And quite serious about it. They really put a shit up with you. I was nearly leaving and going back to England.
Imagine.
Yeah, you imagine, you read it in the paper now what they're doing now. So if they point out that there is still that regiment is now defunct, the foreign were all the one, there was three or four of them up there, they're all now one. But there's a huge percentage involved from the south. Yeah. And some of them are terrified to come home in case it gets out. Because there's some fucking needs around now at the moment. Would do something, yeah. I know it's a big mistake I made, but I wasn't aware of the history. Because,
yeah.
You know, it was going to school, like the 1916 Rising wasn't a part of the curriculum at all, or the Civil War wasn't, because various masses probably had their own politics and what have you, but I mean, boys were after the event, that's our way, yeah, yeah. I was in active service for 3 years in Cyprus. I say most people in Glendalclan know that. And there, I was very young, and sort of the person in charge wanted to keep me safe out of harm's way. So, like, when I was working in the Irish Times, I became a telephone operator, you know, a switchboard operator. I used to do the evenings in Irish Times, you know, if the editor, the new editor wanted the Irish Times office in London or whatever, used to do all that. But when they started the army, they put me at that on the telephone exchange up in the Trudless Mountains in Cyprus, which is the highest point. That's what, they're still there at the moment. Like, that's what the Royal Air Force, and they have the big listening area there for all the shipping in the Middle East. After that, then, I became a battalion clerk, which before that, I'd learned how to type, what do you call the system? I can't think of it now. Touch
typing.
Yeah, touch typing, but they had a particular name on it.
Pitman.
Pitman, says it. Pitman. That was the person that was it. And,
but you were. Army life. What was that? Were you ever in conflict? Or?
No. Even though they didn't do the active service, it was more. There was only one chap from Dublin killed, and that was just by a stray. Not friendly fire, but just they were driving through a village and somebody took a pot shot. He was a lorry driver and killed him. He was from Walkinstown,
yeah.
A chap called Kinsella. They buried him just outside Nicosia. I was a bearer at his funeral. I often think about his parents, how they got on. They're probably dead by now. That was in 1957, 58. His parents are probably dead, but his brothers and sisters could be alive. He was buried in Nicosia, and he's probably there because at that time there was no repatriation. It was too far to bring him from, say, Cyprus back to Ireland, or the cost was too great. So they were all buried in the military graveyard,
mm-hmm.
just outside Nicosia.
And had you an understanding of the politics that was going on there at the time?
No. I was, even the fact I was in the army, it was only when I came home and a few people started to educate me as what I'd done. By, you know, enlisting in a foreign army, which were like done so much harm and damage in Ireland, but I wasn't aware of the history when I did what I did.
But the politics over there in
well, I knew like it was a divided Ireland, or a divided Ireland. The Turkish in one end of it, and Greeks in the other end, and the Greeks there wanted unity with Greece, and the Turks wouldn't hear tell of it. So then you know yourself what happened in 1916. It was an invasion.
Yeah.
Turkish came in and took over, controlled the whole land, and said to the Greeks, you stay there, we'll stay here. And I went back there once, maybe 20 years ago, and down near the place where I was staying. And it was taught to the young lads, the teenagers, and I was asked them about what happened. Not saying that I had been there, but they were saying the biggest problem was that their mothers and fathers and their other generations were buried in a certain area, and they no longer had access to that area. They'd never see them again, or never.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I felt that was hard to take, yeah, that they'd never be allowed back onto their own lands.
That army life, was it, did it give you a good grounding?
Oh, it did, yeah. Like, I ended up like, started off as a clerk, just an ordinary private, and I ended up as a corporal, which was two grades up, because the person in charge, we did all records of all this, description, charge sheets, enlistments, holidays, flights, all that class of stuff, all the sense of education, because I had nothing on it, the primary cert.
Yeah.
I had nothing on that, but I sort of picked up things, not say immediately, but after a period doing it, like it was absolutely no problem to me at all. Like, you know, although in doing amendments to ministry law and all that, you get a little bit of paper and say paragraph something, something, delete this, put this in,
yeah.
All that class of stuff. But I enjoyed it, yeah.